Hello, and welcome to our live seminar, M&A, Hot Segments in the Commercial and Packaging Industry, and the Multiples They Demand, sponsored by New Direction Partners and powered by Printing Impressions Group. I'm Stu Margolis from Margolis Partners, Certified Public Accountants, and I'm pleased to welcome you to today's event. Before we get started, let me take a second to point out the Tips for Attendees widget on your console. It's the blue one with a wrench on it. If you missed the text tips video that was played before the webinar started, you can always click on that widget for more information. Our presenters today are Peter Schaefer and Jim Russell. Both are partners at New Direction Partners, a mergers and acquisition firm that focuses solely on the print and packaging industry. Jim Russell brings over 20 years' experience as a printing company executive, having served as the CEO of two family-owned printing companies. And during his tenure there at Arbor Press in Michigan, the company was an eight-time winner of the NAPL's prestigious Management Plus Awards program. Arbor Press was also recognized twice during Jim's leadership as one of the 50 fastest-growing printers in the country. Our other speaker, presenter, is Peter Schaefer. He's an experienced dealmaker with more than 25 years of investment banking and valuation experience, 20 of which has been focused exclusively on the printing and packaging industry. He has closed more than 100 transactions in virtually every segment of the printing and packaging industries. In addition, he has performed hundreds of valuations for ESOPs, estates, gift tax, and strategic planning purposes. On a personal note, I've had the honor to work with both Jim and Peter on M&A deals and valuations, and they are awesome at what they do. Both are very accessible, and if you ever have a question, please just pick up the phone and call them. Their contact information is at the end of this slide. I encourage you, anyone listening today, as well, to send us their questions throughout the seminar. Use the system here to just send in your questions. I found that the more questions we have, the more informative this webinar is. With all that said, I'd like to introduce Jim and Peter. Peter, could you help give the listeners a little synopsis of what we're going to cover today? And then take
I can.
Great.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Jim and I are thrilled to be participating with you today. And Stu, thank you for the nice introduction. I owe you the five spot after the presentation for that. So keep it up and you can get another five.
All right.
Thanks again for joining us, everybody. We're looking forward to today's webinar, the subject of which is how do you maximize your proceeds if you choose to sell your business, and what today are the attractive segments within the printing and packaging industries. So first, we're going to start by talking about the types of growth, organic versus acquisition. And today, we're going to spend most of our time focusing on acquisition growth. We're also going to talk about the current trends that we're seeing in printing and packaging M&A, what is happening, what has been happening, and what we expect to continue to happen. We'll also talk about how you determine value for earnings-based acquisitions and what buyers are looking for today from both a qualitative and quantitative perspective. We're also going to talk about what segments within printing and packaging are receiving premium multiples in the M&A market. We'll also talk about just in general what multiples we're seeing and why we aren't seeing higher multiples. And then finally, if we have time at the end, over the years, our firm being involved in M&A and nothing but the printing and packaging industries, we have compiled a list, very arbitrary judgmental list, but just over the years, what we have seen, what are the characteristics of a seller that are attractive to buyers, and conversely, what characteristics are unattractive to buyers, and will make you less attractive if you decide to sell. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Jim, who's going to cover the next few slides.
Thank you, Peter, and thank you again, everyone, for joining us. To start the presentation, we want to just take a brief look at these first couple slides, looking back at the past and what some current trends are. And the first slide that's on the screen right now is showing some numbers, according to Printing Industries of America, of the sales history for the commercial printing industry going back roughly 23 years to 1992. You can see that in the 2008, or you can see that we kind of peaked as an industry in roughly year 2000, and again in 2007 nearly hit that same mark of $105 billion in sales. But in 2008 and 9 is the dramatic drop in the market that you've all probably lived through and experienced firsthand. And then for the last 6 years, there's been very modest growth up to the current year, 2014, and PIA continues or expects that 2015 will be relatively close to that same volume. The next slide, also from PIA, shows the number of printing firms in our industry going back roughly 16 years to 1998. When the industry had over 42,000 printing establishments. Today, in 2014, that number has dropped to under 27,000, and it's expected that that will continue to decline for the next few years. This next slide looks forward, and Printing Industries of America expects that from 2009 to 2020, we'll see an overall drop in shipments of approximately 7%, but a drop in the number of plants of nearly 30%. And why is that important? Because if you do the math on that and look at it logically, PIA's long-term outlook is for the number of plants to decline by a larger percentage than the shipments. So as plants decline more than the shipments, the surviving plants on average should experience an increase in revenue. So while we all talk about how difficult organic growth is these days, with the number of plants declining, whether that's through going out of business, through attrition, merger, or acquisition by another company, there should be some organic growth taking place just due to the attrition in the number of companies. So how do you grow? What we're seeing today is companies growing either organically or growth through acquisition. And internal growth, as we just alluded to, is very difficult for most printers. We're seeing some companies today start to grow internally through expanded services or offerings of new products. Some are just benefiting from their competitors in the local landscape disappearing. But growth through acquisition, whether it's a merger or a purchase, continues to be the way that many plants are experiencing growth. And why our business is looking to acquire other companies today. Most of them are either looking to replace sales from a mature market, they're looking to grow their market, or they're looking to add sales and increase increase their volume and spread their overhead out over a larger volume, or reposition into growing markets, something that they haven't gotten into, whether it would be a digital or fulfillment, large format. We're seeing more companies get into Flexo today. And so these are some of the reasons that we're seeing companies look to acquire other businesses. Peter, I think you're taking the next slide.
Can I interrupt for 1 second,
Absolutely.
Jim? This is Stuart. I just want to put this slide up. Why do you think the number of plants is diminishing faster than the shipments? I'm sure the listeners, your description didn't actually say why it's happening. It kind of says it is happening. I'm sure there are reasons behind it, and I thought maybe I'd ask. I mean, I have some ideas of my own, but I thought I'd ask you.
Stu, Peter, feel free to jump in, but I would say first and foremost, as the volumes have declined and printers have struggled to maintain profitability, or some printers not wanted to invest in the technology to stay current, they've chosen to merge or sell. So I think the fact that two companies becoming one is the primary driver behind that. But maybe Peter has another thought on that.
No, I absolutely think that's right. But I would even go a step further and say, if you picture in your mind the first chart that we put up, which was the sales, and you saw the huge drop that we all experienced in 2009, 2008 timeframe. Yes, a lot of people have chosen to merge or sell and become part of another company, but a whole lot of companies didn't have a choice and just either shut down, liquidated, or were able to merge their business into another. So one way or another, that's all consolidation. In the industry, consolidation picked up quite a bit during that time frame. But even back when the industry was healthy, in the 2000 time frame on, we always heard there was too much iron out there. But the industry was growing, so you didn't see the printing companies disappear. But when times grew tough, there was no choice, and the weaker companies did disappear.
Well, great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
So moving on, the next chart is actually, interestingly, shows similar trends to the first chart that I just talked about with the sales. But this is the number of transactions that we have seen in the industry going all the way back to 1990. And it's such a large, fragmented industry that, of course we don't have every transaction in here. But of the ones that we have been able to track, they're represented in here. And to me, what stands out is, forget the crazy days in 98, 99 when we saw so many transactions. But what really happened in the 2007, 2008 timeframe is there were still transactions during that period. But what we saw is that whole time period from, I would say, 2007 through 2010, all the acquisitions were of unhealthy companies. Or let me rephrase that and say the vast majority of the acquisitions were very troubled companies for the reasons we just talked about with Stu's question, where a lot of printers just didn't have any choice but to sell. They didn't have the strong balance sheet. They just couldn't wait for the economy to improve. So those were troubled transactions. But then what we've seen in the last few years where you see the uptick in 2011, 12, 13, and it's continued into 14, that is increases each year because we still have been seeing those transactions or purchases of the unhealthy companies at basically their net asset value. But we've seen a return of an attraction to buying healthy companies for multiples of earnings. And that's why we've seen the growth that we've seen in the past few years. Sorry, I'm trying to advance us to the next slide here. And on the next slide is just real quickly, we covered this a little bit on the last slide, but this is the three types of acquisitions that we're seeing today in printing and packaging. Number one would be, and this is the method we're going to talk about today, That's the traditional earnings-based acquisitions. These are not always the case, but more often than not, the healthier companies that have attractive enough earnings that they can sell for a multiple of earnings for substantially all or a majority of cash at closing. We're also continuing to see the tuck-ins and the cashless mergers where one local competitor buys out another local competitor, or if the business is transportable, they don't have to be in the same locale, but where you're buying a book of business and you're moving it into your own plant to drive up your efficiencies and reduce your excess capacity. Those are great structures. However, they're not what we're talking about today, so that's not the purpose of today's call or webinar. We're going to be covering the traditional earnings-based approach. So you probably have heard this reference before, but when you're looking at a traditional earnings-based approach, the one number that buyer, I'm overstating and simplifying it, but the most important number that a buyer is going to look at is your EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. It's essentially your cash, your operating cash flow. And this is the parameter that buyers tend to look at when valuing your business by the earnings-based method. They will take a multiple and apply it to your EBITDA to estimate the value of the business. And how you get to EBITDA is, this is a hypothetical example we're looking at, but this is a $12 million company on the top line that has adjusted pre-tax profit of $800,000. When I say adjusted, we all know how privately held, family-run businesses in any industry, this is not unique to packaging and printing, but the owners will have a lot of expenses flowing through their P&Ls that if they were to sell their company to an independent third party, those expenses would go away. Oftentimes, it's excess shareholder compensation. It could be board of directors fees. It could be personal legal fees. It could be just general perks. It could also be expenses that or capital improvements or expenditures that were expensed as opposed to capitalized. All of those would be legitimate adjustments. So that's plowed back in this example into the adjusted pre-tax profit of $800,000. You add to that net interest expense, which in this instance is $200,000, and then you add back depreciation and amortization, and that gives you adjusted EBITDA. So in this example, we have an adjusted EBITDA of $2 million. This is a very profitable company because that would represent an EBITDA margin of over 16%. In the specialized segments that we're going to be talking about later on, that is the type of margins that we're seeing for packaging businesses, for label companies, for POP companies. It is not unusual for us to be seeing a 16% margin business today. Back a number of years ago, the PIA profit leaders in all segments, even the general commercial segment, was much higher, probably like 20%. And then it dropped down, Stu, you know better than I, but I would say it dropped down to probably 8% back in 2009. And it's weaved its way back up over the last few years. And as I said, 15 to 17% in attractive segments is attractive, but absolutely not unheard of. So you take that EBITDA of $2 million and you apply it to a multiple. Now, this chart shows us the power of that multiple. And how if you can increase the multiple, your net proceeds are going to increase by a higher percentage. than the multiple increased. So, for example, in the first column, this $2 million company we're assuming is going to sell for 4x EBITDA. And if it were a general commercial printer without a specialty, that could be about the right multiple. It might even be high, but it's probably a pretty good estimate as what this type of business would sell for. You multiply those two together, you get an enterprise value of $8 million. That's not what goes in your pocket, though, because you have to subtract out of that interest-bearing debt, such as line of credit, capitalized leases, notes payable. In this example, there's $3 million in debt, so you get an equity value of $5 million. But what if your multiple were to be 25% higher than that and you were to sell for 5x that EBITDA? Then you get an enterprise value of $10 million and equity value of $7 million, which is a 40% increase in your equity value, even though the multiple only increased by 25%. And then, if you're really in an attractive segment and you sell for 6x EBITDA, which is a 20% increase from the 5x, that gives you an equity value of $9 million, which is a 29% improvement. So, again, don't ever underestimate really two things. Number one, the power of the multiple, because the higher the multiple, you're going to get a proportionally higher proceeds. And also, of course, this goes without saying, don't ever estimate the power of maximizing your EBITDA or your earnings.
Peter, I have a question that came across here. Someone was wondering if the multiple depends on the size of the business. Could you answer that?
It does, and we are going to cover that later on. But the easy answer, Stu, is the size does matter. If you have critical mass that is in the upper echelon of your segment, and it varies by segment what that critical mass could be. Some segments you would have to be $100 million in revenues. Some you would have to be maybe $25 million or even less than that. But, yes, the bigger you are, the more premium you will get in your multiple. And there are a number of factors. And we have a slide where we're going to talk about the factors, qualitative and quantitative, of how you get that higher multiple.
Right.
So the next chart is, in general, the range of multiples that we have been seeing going back to 2006 for printing and packaging companies. This is not segregating by segment yet, which we're going to, and not segregating by critical mass or anything like that. But this is just saying, in general, printing transactions, which would represent the blue, in 2013, we saw going no more than 5.75x EBITDA. And I will tell you, 5.75x for a printing company is absolutely at the very high end. I would say more the general starting point, if you're specialized in growing, would be more on 5x. And if you can get north of 5x, that means you're doing a lot of things right. If you don't have any specialty, you're going to be starting significantly below the 5x, and we will get into that a little further down. The green would represent a premium that you would expect to get if you were a packaging company. Printers might not like to hear this, but packaging firms will like to hear this. The packaging industry is growing and is much healthier in general than the printing industry. It is not as mature, and it's certainly not considered to be a declining industry. And as a result of the higher growth, those companies sell for higher multiples. That has been the case really for quite some time, except, interestingly enough, in 2009, you'll see there was really not much of a premium subscribed to packaging firms over printing companies. And actually, I suspect that's a little bit of a misnomer, because really, during that year, there were so few healthy companies purchased, because that's when, if you remember, the credit markets collapsed, the mortgages, the fiasco. It was almost impossible to borrow money in any industry to buy a printing or packaging company, even if it were healthy and growing. That I think that's misleading, because there just weren't enough transactions to warrant a true random sample. So you might ask, why aren't, if I own a printing company, why can't a buyer come in and pay me 10 times EBITDA? You know, why are we being cut off at, for most companies, I would say 4.5 to 5 times? Because back in the 90s, we saw several printing companies selling for 7 times or even north of that. Well, the answer really is on this chart. This is a, we have just started at New Direction Partners 2 new charts that we're going to show you on this presentation. And they've come as a result of our affiliation with NAPCO. And the first one is the public company EBITDA multiples for both printing and packaging institutions. So for the printing companies, you see the companies that we put on our list: Symveo, Courier, Innis, Inner Workings, Multicolor, Quad, Donnelly, Standard Register, and Vistaprint. Those are the companies that are considered the leaders in the printing industry, and they're the ones that ultimately, even though they might not be the purchaser of a printing company, they are the ones that are going to drive the multiples that are being paid for private companies in the industry. Because it is the strategic public companies that drive the multiples, because they're never going to buy a company in which, or very rarely, I should say, would they buy a company in which they would pay a higher multiple than the multiple that they're trading at in the public markets, because if they did that, it would be dilutive. Instead, it has to be accretive. So if you're trading at 7 times EBITDA and you buy a company for 5 times EBITDA, that delta of 2 times is immediately accretive when you close on a transaction if you're publicly traded. And you need to see a transaction be accretive because, as I said, public companies don't do dilutive transactions. So what this chart shows us is in 2014, the median for the printing industry is 6.82. So that alone will tell you why you're not seeing transactions well above, let's say, 5 times. But then if you go a step further and take a look at, for example, Quad. Quad is trading at 4.7 times. So that means most likely, if you look at some of the deals that Quad's done recently, they acquired Brown Printing not long ago, and they announced that was at about 3 times adjusted EBITDA. Well, it goes to figure that Quad really doesn't want to pay much more than 3 times because they're only trading at 4.9 times. The next chart is going to be the same, but it's for the packaging industry. And for the packaging index, we chose, again, the companies that we think would be the larger companies that would be driving the most visible multiples and what would help determine the private multiples within the packaging industry. We chose Ball Corporation, Bemis, Inc., Graphic Packaging, Packaging Corporation of America, Rock-Tenn, Sealed Air, and Sunoco. And if you look at these, the median multiples are substantially higher than the printing multiples. And again, it's driven because really, well, really it's driven just because of growth. You can go a step further and say it's driven because of growth for the industry. The packaging industry is considered to be growing faster than the printing industry. But also, each of these companies are rewarded with their multiples because of their individual growth rates. And most of these companies in both the printing and the packaging sectors are being rewarded for growth, which is going to be largely obtained through acquisitions. So in this sector, you're looking at higher multiples, as I said, and it Bemis, which is trading at 9.4 times, that means they can pretty easily pay, let's say, 7 times for a profitable, growing packaging entity because, again, they're going to get the growth and they're going to get the accretion overnight on the public markets. So the next chart takes this information, and this is the one that I was referencing that we're producing for NAPCO, and this is what we're calling the NDP printing and packaging EBITDA trend. And you can see the blue would represent the printing medians and the green would represent the packaging. And you can see in every instance, except for 2011, interestingly, packaging has been higher than printing. And we would expect that trend to continue, but that is also the trend that we have been seeing for the last couple of years. The next chart is the second one that I referenced that we're creating now for NAPCO, and that is the NDP Printing and Packaging Index. And this is actually a chart that we created for Printing Impressions years ago, and it is comparing those two sectors that we talked about, printing and packaging, to the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Average on an index basis going back to December 31st, 2006. And what I think is interesting in this chart is if you look up until 2008, it was really very similar in both segments, traced the same pattern as the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And frankly, we're really quite similar overall. 2008 is when, certainly in printing, they really started hitting hard times. And you saw the declines on the first chart that we showed you with the sales drop. A little less so, and you see what's happened since 2008 is packaging has gone very far north of the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones average, whereas printing has languished below those two benchmarks. So, again, that just demonstrates the difference in attractiveness of the two segments. So if you think back to a couple slides ago where we showed you the range of multiples that we're seeing both within printing and packaging, the high end of the multiples that we're seeing for private companies, if I were the owner of a printer or a packager, I would be saying to myself, well, how do I get the higher end of those multiples? How do I receive or deserve a premium? And this slide shows both qualitative factors and quantitative. And the reason I have the one qualitative highlighted in green is the identifiable defensible specialties is twofold. Number one, that is absolutely critical that today and for the past couple years, it is the specialized businesses that are commanding a premium when they decide to sell. In whatever industry, if you have a narrowly defined specialty, you're going to most likely be attractive if you decide to sell the company. The more specialized you are, the better. We have some companies that are, well, for example, I have a client that is specialized in flexible packaging, which is a very hot segment. But then they've gone a step further and they've specialized on a specific industry within flexible packaging that industry is growing dramatically. And as a result, that client is very attractive and being awarded with offers that would be a significant premium. So let's just go through real quickly some of the quantitative factors that help you command a premium multiple. These are not necessarily in order, but number one on our list here is you need to have been able to demonstrate the ability to grow. And that is particularly true for companies since, I would say, 2009. You know, the whole economy in the U.S. struggled during that time. In whatever industry you were in, many companies experienced a decline in 2008, 2009, and that's fine. But the real healthy companies that are selling at high multiples have taken that low point in 2008 or 2009 and have grown each year since then. And if you can demonstrate that and demonstrate the ability to continue that growth pattern, you're going to be attractive. On a similar note, it's not only the top line, it's also the bottom line. It doesn't help if you can generate top line growth, but it's at the expense of your bottom line. To command a high multiple, you need to demonstrate the ability to achieve both. And also, it's not just growth in your earnings, it's healthy margins. You know, I talked about that hypothetical example where the EBITDA margin was 16%. Here I'm saying 12% or more because different segments are going to have different levels of profitability. But it's very important to be able to generate significant margins. Account concentration above 20%, there are exceptions. In certain segments, it's very common to see your top one or two customer maybe be north of 20%, and that's okay as long as you can demonstrate maybe a contract or a long-term relationship. But in general, I would say 20% would be a good benchmark. We talked about this earlier with Stu's question. Critical mass, whatever that is within your segment, the bigger you are, the more attractive. And also, we're seeing particularly now, companies that have had healthy balance sheets are more attractive when companies are selling because it shows the buyer that this company has not been afraid to reinvest back in the business and it has not just taken out all of its earnings, cash flow, over the last few years. Instead, it's been willing to reinvest back in the business and have a healthy balance sheet. A few of the other healthy qualitative factors other than the specialties would be that you can demonstrate customer loyalty. You know, show on a chart that you've been with your top 10 customers for 10 years or 5 years. That's healthy. Don't ever underestimate the importance of being non-union. It's very difficult to sell union companies today, even more difficult to command a premium multiple if you're union. Management is always important, youthful, energetic. Also, you want to have an owner that's willing to stay for at least 2 years. And then finally, it's helpful if you're trying to command top dollar. You don't want the buyer to come in and say, oh, you're in need of a $3 million press, so we're going to factor that into your purchase price. If it's a replacement press, that's what they're going to do, is they're going to factor that into your purchase price. If it's an expansion press where you can demonstrate you're going to be bringing the company into new markets, new customers, new growth opportunities, then you have a pretty good story where the buyer ought to be willing to pay for that, or maybe they have the press already. But if you're in need of significant CapEx, that does not help you. So I think the next slide is continuing on the specialization theme. What do we see as the segments that are very attractive to buyers and commanding the higher multiples? On the printing side, it would be large format or retail POP companies. Large format can be digital, it can be offset, both are attractive. Retail POP can be both too, for that matter, could also be screen. Those two segments also, in many lines, there can, in many situations, they can be considered packaging as well. We put them in the print category here, but they, that can be a little shady if it's packaging or printing. We have sold, anecdotally, over the last 3 years, we have sold, I believe, four POP slash large format businesses. I can tell you that is a very attractive segment right now. There are a number of buyers, strategic and financial, seeking to grow in those segments, and each time we have been in the very fortunate position of having multiple buyers show up trying to buy these companies, and that's resulted in a higher price for the seller or more premium of a multiple. Another attractive segment would be program versus transactional. And what I mean by that is this is a recently a kind of a new phenomenon that we've noticed, and that is you can be a commercial printer without a specialty, but if you have some sort of a proprietary IT offering where you're controlling data and you're generating program-type business as opposed to transactional business, that is very attractive to buyers right now because what it's doing is it's enabling the commercial printer to go beyond the typical commodity market where the only really important factor is if you're the lowest price. If you can demonstrate that you have a proprietary IT offering that your competitors do not, all of a sudden you're able to generate loyalty from your customer, and price, while it's always important, is not necessarily the most important factor. We have had a client recently, a commercial printer, that was not necessarily performing well. In fact, it wasn't performing well, but it had its own IT offering. And a significant percentage of its revenues were program-driven as opposed to transactional. And because of that, I can tell you, we received offers from three private equity buyers and multiple strategic buyers because they saw an opportunity to maybe buy some other underperforming companies that don't have a proprietary IT offering where they could offer it through the company they were buying, and that it would be a healthy market. Web-to-print is also attractive, and digital, variable data, direct marketing, and digital printing, all very attractive in the printing segment. Lastly would be data analytics firms. Jim, maybe you want to talk about the client we had on that segment not too long ago.
Well, that client was a data analytics and some mail shop, but we took that to market recently and had a lot of suitors for that. I think we had three offers, and that was a company that really was able to get to a multiple that was really closer to things what we used to see back in the 90s. So that was a segment of the industry. If you can show that you can control the data, you can really increase the multiple of your business, and that was a very good example.
So, again, on this side of the page, that's the printing segment, and those are all driving premium multiples today. On the packaging side, really anything in packaging is going to be considered attractive. But in particular, we are seeing incredible, very strong interest in flexible packaging companies. We currently have two flexible packaging entities, and just as I told you with the large format, the POP, multiple buyers showing up trying to buy these entities, driving up the multiples. Very, very healthy. That is still the case, also has been the case for some time in the label industry. We recently sold a label company to a publicly traded buyer, and that was at a very healthy multiple. Again, kind of back to the days of the 90s. Pharmaceutical packaging. Jim and I represented a international buyer recently that in a big way wanted to expand into pharmaceutical packaging. And the multiples that you would see in that segment would be very surprising to you. Very high, very competitive with private equity. And, of course, folding cartons also continues to be a healthy segment that would drive a higher multiple. So with that, I think I'm going to turn this over to Jim for this next slide.
All right. And this next slide will help you if you're questioning or wondering what's the EBITDA multiple for your business or your segment of the industry. This slide will maybe put that in perspective for you and give you a graphic. Skip the yellow bars for just a minute, and starting with the blue bars, this is the printing segment, and it shows kind of the base multiple that you might expect. So for a non-specialized or a general commercial printer,
that's small.
At a smaller company, you might expect something in the 3 to 3.5 times EBITDA as a multiple. And you can see the different segments as you go up through book and insert printers or direct mail printer, digital printers, those number increase. A web to print might start at a 3 to 3.5 to 4.5 multiple. And then when you get into the packaging sector, they continue to go even higher with a point of purchase, large format folding carton, starting at 4.5 to 5, and then pharmaceutical and label and flexible start out north of 5. Then going back to the top of the chart, the yellow bars represent additions to those base numbers. So if you're growing, and if you can demonstrate sustained growth over the last 3 or 4 years, you can add another 3/4 to 1.5 to your multiple. And then if you've got, if you're a larger company with EBITDA north of $3 million, you could add another 0.5 to 1 point to those multiples. If you're north of $10 million, you can add another 0.25 to 0.5 point, possibly. And then we know this is somewhat arbitrary, but if you've got a critical mass within your business, whatever segment you're in, whatever geographic area you're in, if the buyer views it as there's critical mass within your business, you can add roughly another 0.5 point or give or take a little bit. So all of those are additions to the potential additions to the blue or the green bar to arrive at what the multiples are in the various segments of the industry right now.
I would just add, this is a confusing chart, but at the end of the day, we think it can be a very helpful chart to somebody thinking of, you know, really trying to figure out what their company might be worth in terms of an EBITDA multiple. So if anyone has questions on this, please call either Jim or me. We'd be happy to run it through you because, for example, the critical mass premium, that's a big premium, But to be clear, that's really only going to be to the very large companies. And for example, if you're in the general commercial segment, I believe it would be maybe $100 million or more. It would be smaller, obviously, for a digital printer, probably $25 million, but it is going to differ by segment, but it is going to be a pretty sizable premium if you really are that size.
Peter, this is Stuart. One of the questions I got, looking at this chart, someone's confused, or the question is the premium higher for a company that's larger than $3 million EBITDA versus the $10 million? In other words, it looks like the chart is telling us that the premium is higher for companies over $3 million than the ones that are over $10
million. No, what I believe that's saying, and see, you're right, it is a confusing chart. That would be on top of the $3 million premium.
So you'd add a...
So the smaller premium, right, for the $10 million would be maybe a quarter of a point on top of the premium you're getting for being more than $3 million in EBITDA.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Thank you.
Any other questions on that one, Stu, or should we move on?
That was good.
Okay. So the next chart is kind of our conclusion page, but it is, what do we expect to happen with the multiples going forward? Unfortunately, nobody has a crystal ball. But we believe with the dynamics that we're seeing in the economy and the industry that barring anything catastrophic like a recession or another 9/11 or anything like that, we believe that it's a healthy M&A market and we believe that it will continue. In fact, looking at it today, we think it's hard to imagine a better market for M&A transactions. Interest rates are low. Stock markets are at record levels. There is a lot of pent-up demand with private equity companies that just were not able to borrow during the 2009 time frame. They can now, and they can borrow at low rates. So we're seeing a lot of interest with both strategic and private equity buyers. The buyers out there that we showed you on the public company charts, their high multiples are being driven by their ability to grow. And today, in printing and packaging, acquisition growth is easy to come by. Organic growth might be easier in packaging than it is in printing, but still, growth by acquisition is a very easy way to grow. So we expect that trend to continue. The last charts, we really don't need to spend much time on at all. But if anyone has questions, please reach out to us and we're happy to send them to you. This is, as I told you at the beginning, we have a couple pages of positive attributes if you're a seller and conversely negative attributes. And we've already covered what I would believe would be the top 10 or so for quantitative and qualitative. But number one, on the positive attributes, we have non-union, advanced technology. You have to be able to demonstrate that you're within a specialty and that you have some sort of proprietary IT offering, and that's going to be make you very attractive if you decide to sell. Specialization, some of the ones that we didn't cover would be if you have audited or reviewed financial statements. That makes you more attractive because it just gets the buyer more comfortable with your numbers. Also, you want to have some available capacity, but you don't want to have 80% available capacity. So there's a fine line, but I would say 25 to 35% would be ideal. Management that's willing to stay, we already talked about that. Clean facilities, of course, and being number one or number two in your market, that also can tie back to the critical mass. On the negative side, it's going to be mostly just the converse of the positives. So, for example, If you're unionized, that's negative. If you need CapEx, and I'm not going to cover all of these because we already talked about a lot of these. One could be, though, your plant. If you're landlocked and there's no room for expansion, that can be a negative. It's not necessarily a deal killer by any means, but if you're trying to generate a premium multiple, that can be a factor in the multiple that you're ultimately paid as well. So with that, thank you again for joining us. And, Stu, I'll turn it back to you, but I believe that concludes the presentation that Jim and I had.
That's great. Actually, I just have a couple of questions for you. One of the questions that came across was, you know, I guess it says, explain what's going on in the private equity market. Why would private equities be interested in printing companies? And or what is their expectations if they were to buy one?
Jim, you want to answer that?
Well, surprisingly, we're actually seeing private equity firms much more active in the last year or so. There are some smaller niche private equity firms that are looking at companies as small as 20 or 30 million in revenue. And again, as Peter said, the attractive businesses in the industry, the ones that are in a niche that is growing, particularly packaging, private equity will find that attractive because they feel it can grow, they feel it's sustainable for a long period of time, and we're very pleased with the amount of activity we're seeing from private equity companies in the last year. So,
yeah, if I could just add a little bit, I'll say, and to echo what Jim just said, up until the start of 2014, if I were to go into a healthy company and make a prediction, almost always it would be, I believe the buyer is going to be a strategic buyer because I thought they were willing, at the time, they were willing to pay higher multiples than private equity, and they just would be more enamored with the transaction. But in 2014 on, I don't want to say we've seen the opposite because that's not the case, but we have seen very strong interest from private equity buyers, and we have two, if not three, letters of intent right now with clients that are with financial buyers at very healthy multiples. So right now it's either or.
Well, great. Thank you. Just then I'll give you 30 seconds to answer this next question. If I have a company that has some packaging, some commercial printing, and some label printing, what would be a method for me to calculate my expected multiple of EBITDA?
That's a hard one to answer in 30 seconds because most companies are in different segments like that. Most sheet fed companies do have digital capabilities and many also have web offset capabilities and some have large format capabilities. I think really the ultimate answer is going to be what's the biggest market that you're focused on and where are you generating your growth? If you're generating your growth in one of the healthy segments, then that's going to help you get a premium multiple. I don't know if you're going to get a full premium that you would have if you were 100% POP, for example, but it will get you a premium from your less attractive segments.
Right. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. That's actually the answer I expected from you. Thank you. Well, it looks like we're about done here today. On behalf of New Direction Partners and the publications Printing Impressions and Package Printing, I want to thank everyone for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out Printing Impressions and Package Printing's webinar page to get information on all the other archived and upcoming webinars. There's also a brief feedback survey that will show up on your screen next. We would be grateful if you could fill that out for us. And I hope to see you next time on one of these webinars. Peter and Jim, I want to thank you very much for everything you've done today, and thank everybody for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Take care.